Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
And hello and welcome to my TED Talk. Today, I'm going to be discussing how the use of the term daddy changed dramatically after the release of Hellraiser in 1987. Now, as you can see here in Exhibit A, the term daddy before Hellraiser was reserved to a father figure. You'd be like, can I have some milk, daddy? And your daddy would be like, oh yes, daddy will give you some milk. But after Hellraiser, the term became reserved more for the kinkies. And as we now have a demonstration from my good friend and fellow doctor, Zach, we will see how this term has changed.
First here, we have a child. Child, you may say daddy.
Ah, daddy! Can you buy me a golden ticket, daddy?
Yes, see? A proper use of the word daddy. But after the movie Hellraiser, this has become uncomfortable. Mm. Did you not cringe during that?
Oh, I cringe constantly.
Yes, that's your constant facial setting. And now we have an adult saying daddy. Daddy! See how it has changed into a more sexual tone now that I've said it.
Exactly. Daddy. Why, it does feel quite hot and bothersome, yes.
Yes, daddy.
Hello and welcome to Oldie But a Goodie, and I think we can both agree that that intro was an oldie.
Yeah, but a goodie.
Our cold opens really do throw people off, but I love it. It's great.
It threw me off because you didn't tell me what you were doing.
I just started it.
Yeah.
Usually we debrief on what the intro is going to be, but not for this one. No, I just decided to throw you into the deep end.
Throw me into the daddy end.
The daddy end. podcast, we talk about movies from 1987 in the order they came out in, and this week we are talking about the kind of classic film Hellraiser.
I'd say it's a classic.
And my name's Sandro and your name is Zach.
Classic for its era, I think. I think, it's definitely up there with things that people think about when they think about old horror movie sort of things. So
do they, or do they just think of Pinhead? That's I'm not saying this is a bad movie, but it's the classic horror film that even hardcore horror fans haven't seen.
Yeah.
But everyone knows Pinhead, but not necessarily the movie.
Well, that's not necessarily bad for the movie. It's just saying it had great visuals, you know?
True.
Great design. So, yeah.
No, it's an interesting one, because Pinhead has become a staple of the genre.
Mm.
But, yeah, I know so many people who have never seen Hellraiser, but are like, Pinhead looks kind
of
cool.
And I think that's really indicative of a sort of classic movie, is that you might not have seen it, but you would recognize it, you know, in pop culture and other things, so...
Yeah.
I would argue that, yes, it's a classic, but not in the way that a lot of other classic movies are. Like, The Godfather, it's not the classic
right.
Or like that, you know?
Yeah. And not like a Elm Street, which is exactly what you expect it to be. You know, it's just Freddy.
It's a classic because of its visual design and also of how just sort of different it is from a lot of other ones as well.
Yeah. Yeah, first impressions, what do you think of Hellraiser?
Well... Okay, great segue. I'll get them to in a second. I just want to point out what a great segue that was into that section and how I am butchering it now because I'm actually almost deliberately making the segue.
Well, they do call me Segue Sandy.
Segue Sandy.
And the running joke for this episode now.
It's Segway Sandy Daddy.
Oh, yeah.
It's the full term.
No. They call me the Segway Daddy.
The Segway Daddy. Absolutely. So, my first impressions of this movie. It was very cool. I liked it. I liked it a lot. It wasn't as what I expected going into it. Although I wasn't expecting anything, it just wasn't this.
Were you expecting a slasher with Pinhead?
Yeah, I was thinking Pinhead was, like, because he's such an iconic figure that he's around, that he would have, one, more screen time, and two, more plot influence. But no, he's just this sort of figure that's there. But I actually quite liked it. I liked it a lot, that they were just like, no, it's more about what's happening in this family and how that lady is a complete, the worst person in the world.
Everyone in the family is the worst, aside from the daughter, really. They're all bad.
They're not great. The husband's okay.
Oh, actually, yeah, no, I read the book as well. The short story that this is based off, and he's a real piece of work in the book.
Oh, nice.
But in the movie, yeah, no, he is fine in the movie.
Yeah, he's not great. He's not a great husband, but he's not a bad person, you know? He's just a bad husband in the movie.
Yeah, and really, who isn't, quite frankly?
Wow, okay, well, that's something you and your therapist to need to talk about, Sandro.
I don't know. I've got a lot of issues to work through with my therapist before to get to that. First of all, I always call my therapist, oh, Dr. Daddy, and they don't like it. And we've been working through that for the last little while. So.
Yeah, I could see why she would be offended.
And she's like, Dr. Mummy, please.
Yeah.
But I keep insisting on Dr. Daddy.
And you have to get through your father issues first, you know, before you get to your marriage ones. Anyway, the visuals were great. I quite enjoyed the movie's just a bit wacky plot. I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, it's pretty different.
And I liked hating on the wife.
Well, she sucks, but also, like, in a human way, you can see where she's coming from. Like, it's not like she's the big bad and you've got to hate her. Yeah.
But how does she not realize she's going to be betrayed in the end?
Well,
like, come on. Although it didn't work out how I thought it would.
Yeah, but, no, yeah. It's good. It's not all great. There's some ideas that don't entirely stick the landing. Some of the special CGI effects are pretty bad.
Oh, right. Yeah. Well, I thought the effects were all right. They did it fine.
Yeah.
The practical effects were obviously way better than the CGI effects, and that was definitely an issue, but because the practical effects were so good, it makes the CGI effects look worse.
Quite bad, yeah.
Yeah, than they even were.
And it's quite a low-budget movie as well, and they did a good job getting around that, like, all the practical effects are in shadows, which is quite good. There's one, the scorpion thing that didn't look amazing, because it was, like, quite close up. It didn't work as well, but it was a very cool...
Well, that stupid slap fight that they had was very, very janky.
Well, I'm keen to, delve deeper into this movie with Daddy. But first, what were the alternate options?
Oh, nice, Segue Daddy. Good work.
Well, I am the Segue Daddy.
Yeah, good work, Segue Daddy.
That's my name.
Don't wear it out. But we will.
We will.
So, your other options were Amazon Woman on the Moon.
Oh, that's right.
Yep.
Or as I like to call it, Amazon Daddy on the Moon.
That's
right, I'm doing this for all of the movies. They're all getting replaced with the word Daddy. No.
Amazon Daddy. Parody of a low-budget sci-fi movies. It's 21 short sketches.
Probably going to be a Patreon option at some point, I reckon.
Yeah, that sounds fun. We have Fatal Attraction.
Or as I like to call it, Daddy Attraction. Or Fatal Daddy. Both work very well.
I think Daddy Attraction's my favourite of those. A married man who has a weekend affair with a woman who refuses to allow it to end and becomes obsessed with him.
Oh, it's the same as this movie, but without the horror aspects.
Or the enjoyable aspects. Maurice.
Or as I like to call it, Daddy.
Yeah, that one doesn't work so well.
No, it doesn't.
It's a story of a repressed gay love during the early 1900s.
I like to call this movie Daddy. You put the at the beginning. Daddy. I watched this film.
Oh, okay.
Look, it was 2.5 hours long.
Wow, that is a long one.
I love a long movie. We love long... Well, I love long movies more than you, maybe.
Yeah, it depends on the movie. If it's a good movie, I like it to be long. If it's dragging it out unnecessarily, it's The Hobbit.
And you know what I say, Daddy loves them long. So, anyway, it was a good movie. Was it too long? Maybe. It is based off a book, and I feel like they added everything. There was a scene where a stuffy English professor teaches a boy about the birds and the bees by drawing, like, images in the sand at the beach. And then this family come by after they've left and are like, "Oh, cover your eyes, children, look at the drawings." It was very funny.
That is incredible. Yeah, you know what? 10 out of 10 movie. Yeah.
I enjoyed that a lot. Anyway, it's a goodie. Continue.
The Pickup Artist.
Or as I like to call it, The Pickup Daddy.
The Pickup Daddy. Robbie Downey Jr.
Robbie Daddy Jr.
He's my Pickup Daddy.
Ooh.
He's a womanizing pickup artist, or pickup daddy, mm-hmm. as we know.
Pickup Daddy.
Who accidentally falls in love.
Oh, no.
Love Robbie Downey Jr. Hate the concept of this movie.
Mm-hmm.
The Principal.
Or as I like to call it, The Daddy Pull. Ooh. Oh, wait, that makes it worse.
Why did you do that? Jim Belushi teams up with security guards of the school he's principal of to stop drugs from getting in.
Great.
Tough guys don't dance.
Tough daddies don't dance.
Ooh. A writer wakes up with a tattoo and a girlfriend, and he's like, "How did this happen?"
That one, that's right.
Maybe he's a dad. We don't know.
Maybe he is a dad. Anyway, the only real, well, I mean, I've watched Maurice, but Amazon Women is definitely the other pick there.
Yeah, we would definitely need to do that at some point.
But we couldn't pass up Hellraiser, which we'll get into now. Now, here's the thing with Hellraiser. It is technically an independent horror film. Very low budget, released by a very small distributor. And because of this, it actually premiered at the Cannes Film Festival in France earlier in the year.
Mm.
So this is technically a festival movie. The release date we're going by is the American release date, which is the 18th of September. Mm. But it did get released like a week earlier in the UK because this is a British film.
Mm.
The film itself is written and directed by Clive Barker, who also wrote the original short story that the movie is based off.
Well, I would say that he's barking up the right tree.
Oh.
So he wrote the story as well? He wrote the short story?
Yeah, he was a pretty big... Well, no, he still is a pretty big horror author. Mm.
Wow, that's cool. Not only the one who actually wrote it, but actually directed the movie. So you get... I think sometimes that's the reason you get bad... is the people don't understand what made the book good and other things. So
yeah.
I think he's done this one justice. He's done quite
well.
Yeah.
I mean, it can go in many different ways. Like, for example, The Shining. That's incredible, but nothing like the book. And then Stephen King made his own adaptation that's closer to the book, and it's one of the worst things ever.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. It can go the other way.
It can go in different ways, but I think because it's based off a short story, there's a lot of room... for things to change, for things to be expanded upon, and that does kind of suit quite well into the film format.
Mm.
And yeah, he did a really good job. Like, it's not the best directing that we've seen, but it's really solid, particularly how he, like, hides the practical effects and everything. Another one of the short stories that he wrote, The Forbidden, was turned into the Candyman franchise as well, and that new Candyman film just came out, and I'm pretty keen to see it whenever it's out. That's going to be a fun one.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
All right.
And also, Clive Barker famously hates the fact that Pinhead was called Pinhead. He hates the name Pinhead because I think in the book it's just called the lead Cenobite.
Mm.
Pinhead was very much named by the fans, and he's like, "I hate it." So anyway.
Pinhead.
I like Pinhead. It's a good name. It is a bit dumb, though, to be fair.
Yeah. It's demeaning to the character, but like, if your character has no name, it's going to get probably a name that just describes what they look like.
Mm.
And I think it makes sense, and I think it doesn't take away from the character.
I don't think so.
When someone says Pinhead, I don't think that he's called Pinhead. I don't think that's his name. That's not what he writes on his ID, you know? That's not what it's on his ID.
It's kind of like with Michael Myers, how technically he's called The Shape.
What? The Shape?
In the movie, like, he's called Michael Myers, obviously, because everyone knows who it is behind the mask, but him as a killer is called The Shape.
Yeah, and then they were just like, fuck it, he's Michael Myers now, everyone knows that.
For the cast, we've got Claire Higgins as Julia, The stepmother.
Was it a stepmother?
Well, she's the stepmother to Kirsty. This is the first thing that she ever did on screen. A lot of theatre work before this. She was also in Golden Compass and Ready Player One. And I think she plays a very unlikable character very well.
Yeah, absolutely. That's what I was going to say. She might be my favourite in the movie just because of how much I hated her.
Yeah.
Yeah, she makes a very good, like, she's clearly just making the incorrect decisions almost all the time.
Mm.
But she also seems realistic, which makes it makes you more angry.
Yeah, you can see why she's doing things, where she's coming from. Which is what I like about this movie is that, yeah, it is a bit more human rather than the characters are just meat sacks to get murdered.
Yeah. And I think that what makes it maybe not so much scary, but a little bit more, like, disturbing is that they seem more human, which means it could happen more readily, the decisions that they're making.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, you could see someone making the decisions she's making, and that makes you angry.
Yeah.
How dare you make those decisions?
Because that's often something that, like, people who watch horror films get angry at horror films about. Like, oh, I wouldn't walk in that room. I don't think there was ever a moment in this movie where I was like, oh, I wouldn't do that if I was that person. I think everyone made the right decisions for what their character was. Their character was?
I think there was some for me, but I guess we'll get into that.
The husband, Larry, is played by Andrew Robinson. In the book, he's called Rory. I don't know why they changed his name from Rory to Larry.
I don't think it matters.
I don't think it does either. He is Elam Garrick in Deep Space Nine.
Oh, yeah. That's where I recognized him from. I like it.
His daughter, Kirsty, is played by Ashley Lawrence. In the book, Kirsty is not their daughter, is instead a friend who has a crush on Rory.
Oh.
But is like, but Rory's married, but I'm gonna try and wreck the marriage.
Oh, I see. It's like a love interest thing.
Yeah, they go for, because there's already a love triangle in the movie. In the book, it's like a love square. That's four parts.
I think it's a love pentagram.
Oh, satanic. Sean Chapman plays Daddy himself, Frank, who hasn't done much, but he was in that spy movie, The Fourth Protocol, with Michael Caine, that was an option a little while ago. He was in that.
Yeah, he was all right. He was cool.
He looked very spy-y.
He was kind of doing that bad boy pick up chicks sort of thing, right?
Yeah.
Because that was his whole thing, was he liked to bang a lot.
He's always searching for the next level of pleasure.
Next level of pleasure.
When he is a skinless boy, though, he's played by Oliver Smith. So two people plays Frank.
Ah, yeah. I was going to ask if he was played by someone else.
He really just goes in on calling himself Daddy as well. Like, he's so committed to this bit.
I mean, so are we, to be fair, if you've noticed. Yeah. But
so is society.
Yeah.
Society after this movie was forever changed and everyone just used Daddy.
I don't know. I don't know if it was this movie. You're very obsessed saying this movie.
I don't think it was this movie. I think it was a slow change.
But also, this movie doesn't use it very safe. I mean, I guess Frank's trying to bang the daughter. I guess that's kind of his motif, but, you know.
Well, he does say, come to Daddy, in like a way that would imply, but also, I don't know. That could just be me projecting.
He does say it in the way that we would say it now.
Yeah.
Which is creepy.
But ahead of its time, quite frankly.
Ahead of its time, yeah, I think. Yeah.
Quite frankly. Comedy. Doug Bradley plays Pinhead. I think he's still playing in Pinhead. I don't know if he's going to be playing Pinhead in the remake, but we'll talk about the sequels at the end.
I don't think he will. They can quite easily replace him with someone else, I think, and they'll do that.
Oh, his face itself, though, is showing, so it is kind of recognizable.
Yeah.
But if they're remaking the franchise, then yeah, just get someone else. Get someone
I feel
young.
Like he'll be left to the wayside, which is a shame, because I think he was quite good.
He's good. His voice is good. I like the Pinhead voice.
Yeah. It was just that level of authority that was, like, believable.
If for some reason you care, the other Cenobites are called the Chattering Cenobite, later redubbed the Chatterer.
And he's got his teeth. I know the one, because he's doing his little teeth thing.
The one with the glasses is called Butterball, for some reason.
That's so funny, thinking about where Butterball, like, got wrecked by the house.
Yeah.
What an idiot.
It really is. It's just a dum-dum.
That's the one that's, like, the reason he doesn't speak during this film is whenever that he speaks, all the other ones go, "Shut up, Butterball, you fucking idiot. Shut the fuck up. No one asked you."
Exactly. He's the John Candy of the bunch. He's the,
Yeah.
And then... The female Cenobite doesn't have a name.
Oh.
Doesn't have a name.
We could call her Mummy Cenobite.
Mummy. Well, she's got, like, her throat open, which looks amazing. So we could call her, Actually, no, everything with the word throat just feels... No. No.
How about throat mummy?
Throat mummy. Oh, I hate it. I hate it, but it's on brand with this whole universe. So... 72% on Rotten Tomatoes, and the audience score is 72% as well.
Wow, that's a consensus.
That's the first time that's ever happened, I think.
I think that's the first time the audience score and the critic score has aligned exactly.
Aligned exactly.
It's very unusual.
Also, IMDb, 7 out of 10. So close.
Yeah, I think the consensus is that it is just like a very 7...
Mm.
7.7 out of 10, you know?
Exactly. Yeah, a lot of the reviews at the time were like, looks incredible, super gory, special effects are a bit rushed, but it's not the worst thing we've seen.
Mm.
Some of the lines are a bit corny, but it's fine.
Oh, yeah. But that only enhances a movie, I feel.
It did cost a total of $1 million. Very cheap.
Ooh.
Very cheap. What do you think it made?
Only $1 million. Wow, that's very impressive.
Yeah.
I mean, you were saying it was a cheap film, but even still, yeah. I thought you'd say like 2 million, 3 million.
Well, yeah, like the 1 million would be, it's mostly one location, like the house.
Yeah.
And then just the special effects, I guess. It's like the outfits.
And it got released as like a indie and then it got a worldwide release?
Yeah, so I'm counting US, UK and Canada. Their box office is the only numbers that I have. So I've just combined
them all. Okay, their box... Yeah, okay. No, that gives me a good range.
Doesn't count Australia, but we don't count as a country, so it's fine.
Yeah, well, we don't exist. No. We're paid actors, remember?
We're fake.
Sometimes I forget. Because I'm Canadian Zach.
Yeah,
so I'm
Canadian
not
Zach.
Actually a paid actor, but now I'm pretending to be a paid
We've
actor.
We've really brought back the canon of this show in the last few episodes.
Yeah. We've got to keep it canonical, Sandro.
Exactly.
We've got a little off track there. 30 mil. I was going to say 30 mil.
Pretty close. It's 16 mil, just a little less.
Whoa, a lot less, I'd say.
I mean...
That's half.
You could see it that way. I prefer to see the good... And,
I mean, that's what? That's 16 times profit?
That's pretty good.
I think that's pretty solid.
And this was, of course, a massive hit on VHS. Taglines. There's 4 taglines.
Ooh, I'm excited.
Thumb up or thumb down. Pick your favorite. The first tagline is, "Demon to some, angel to others."
Yeah, okay. I liked that sort of aspect of them. Because they gave pleasure, but, you know, is that a good thing? Is it a bad thing? Because you died for it. Who knows? I'll give it a medium thumb. I don't think it's a great one, though. It doesn't get me excited to watch the movie.
Okay. The second one is, "He'll tear your soul apart."
I mean, that is a quote from the movie. I'm going to thumbs down that one, though.
Ooh, that's a classic line, though.
I mean, it's a good line. But it's not a good tagline.
True.
You know, this makes me think it's a Michael Myers, you know?
It's like if the tagline, right? Like, not all quotes make good taglines. Classic quote from this movie is, "I came." Imagine that being the tagline. That'd be weird.
No, that'd be a thumbs up from me. That'd be a big thumbs up. That would get me in the cinema, that's for sure.
The third tagline is, "There are no limits."
Eh.
Yeah.
Nah, that one's a thumbs down. I like the other one more, to be honest, yeah.
And the fourth one is, "Satan's done waiting."
Ooh.
I don't know what the context of that is.
It's an interesting tagline, though. I'll give that another shaky thumbs, because that makes me intrigued. Although, it'd be before the movie, I would be intrigued by it. After the movie, I'd be mad at it.
Yeah.
Because it's clearly marketing trying to get you in.
It's not great. I lied. There is a fifth tagline.
Whoa! Bonus tagline.
The fifth tagline's actually a pull quote from Stephen King.
Oh! Oh, okay.
And it's, "I have seen the new face of horror.
and its name is Clive Barker.
Pretty good. I like
Big
that.
Big thumbs up. Big thumbs up. Hell yeah.
Let's get into the movie itself. The font, just your classic white font on a black background. Nothing too fancy.
You know what? That was a good segue, daddy. Just saying. No. I just want to throw it out there before we get in there. Sorry. Yeah, I got distracted a little. Yeah, the font was good. The font was good. Yeah, it wasn't crazy. It was just like every other font.
Yeah.
It's like a typewriter font, I think it is. That's the real thing it goes for.
Oh, yeah, I can see that. I'll tell you what, I genuinely dislike how you have the font and then you zoom out and the font's like imprinted in this tiny circle in the middle of the cube.
Oh, yeah, that was silly.
I was a fan.
Oh, I was a fan.
No. Speed all over again.
Hell yeah. That's what I was after. Give me more speed. We see a market or such, an oriental market.
We know that's probably what was written on the script. We open in an oriental market.
Yeah. Generic Asian whatever. Doesn't matter. You know, it's like, because everything mystical has to come from Asia, you know?
Of course.
Yeah. It was a different time. We see two figures sitting at a table. They broker a deal.
As I like to call it, a daddy deal.
Uh-huh.
Yep. I go to the market, and I'm like, I like your product. Let me cut a daddy deal. And the store owner goes, please leave.
As they should. Yeah. I'm just imagining you at a supermarket. You have to go to a cashier because you can't. You've tried the electronic ones, but it just doesn't. It doesn't feel right trying to ask the electronic ones
for a daddy deal. Exactly.
You have to ask, and the cashier's like, "Wait, are you trying to get a discount?"
No, I just want a daddy deal.
It's $16.95. I just cash your card.
And also, I regularly like announce myself as I'm going to the cashier as well. I'm like, "Daddy's come to haggle," and they're all like, "Who is this person?" I'm banned from so many supermarkets around the Coburg.
I was about to say, how many supermarkets don't allow you in anymore?
All of them.
Yeah. I feel like they would allow you in maybe two or three more times before they like start recognizing you as the daddy dealer.
Yeah.
And
oh no. I'm not the daddy dealer. That's Steve. Steve's the daddy dealer.
Oh, I see.
I just want the daddy deals.
I see. Okay.
Yeah. If we ever have an online store, the discount code should be daddy deal.
No. I am ending this daddy theme this episode.
It's gonna keep going. It's gonna keep on going. Daddy doesn't stop.
Quote, end quote.
Ugh.
Okay. So he brokers this cube with a guy. He says, "What is your pleasure?" Which comes back right at the very end as well. Which I quite like that line because we learn what it really means. But he deals with this guy, and after he leaves, he buys this box.
Yes,
this cube. It is a puzzle cube.
Oh, it's like a Rubik's cube, but it's golden and not at all like a Rubik's cube.
Yeah, for those unfamiliar with puzzle boxes, they're usually some. It's like a Rubik's cube, except not necessarily, you know, uniform in its twists and turns.
Yeah.
And the idea is you have to sort of figure out how to unlock it. That's the sort of puzzle in it. And there's usually some tricks to a lot of them.
Mm.
And he gets this, and when he buys it and walks away, the guy said, like, whispers under his breath, "It was always yours."
Yeah, that was cool.
Yeah.
The whole opening is quite mystical in that you don't really know what is going on. You know some real messed up stuff is going on, but you're not entirely sure what is.
I would say you don't really know what's going on throughout the entire movie. I think that's kind of the
true.
I mean, there are points you obviously know what's happening, but I think the overall magical part of it, I think is deliberately vague, and I like that.
It is quite vague, which is good. I like the vagueness. Let your imagination fill stuff in.
Yeah, are the Deadites actually demons?
Deadites? That's Evil Dead Patreon right now. Patreon.com, Ollie, but a goodie pod. Get the Evil Dead episodes now.
Great plug, Plug Daddy.
Plug Daddy.
Plug Daddy, plug me harder.
There's that explicit tag we were looking for.
What are they called then? They're not Deadites. What are they called?
Cenobites.
Cenobites.
Pretty close.
You can see where the confusion was.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Cenobites, are they actually demons? Are they aliens? Because they say they're explorers, right?
Yeah, like interdimensional.
But does that make them an alien? Would that be an alien?
Probably, I don't know.
We'd never answer those questions. It's for you to decide. Are they demons, angels, aliens, interdimensional beings?
Are they just racists? That could be it.
What?
Yeah, they're just a bunch of racists.
Elaborate.
No.
Please.
I refuse. This person who has bought the box brings it to a quite rundown, spooky room and plays with the box, manages to open it up, and when he opens it up, hooks spout out from it.
Yeah, he's like surrounded in this dark, dingy room with just candles lit up, some almost satanic ritual looking thing, and yeah, these hooks appear out of nowhere and we just see him scream. I hate the visual of the hooks. I love and hate, I should say.
Like, when they are, like, hooking into his flesh? Oh, yeah, it's gross.
It's real. Makes me uncomfortable. Because it's just, you can see the hook goes in, and it, like, pulls the flesh and blood starts pouring. It's very good. It's very good. But also, I'm very uncomfortable whenever I saw it.
Yeah, it's real yucko. It's real yucko.
Real yucko.
We then see, like, the aftermath of this, which is the room with this tiny bits of flesh hanging from random hooks. A shattered face is lying on the floor.
But it's not the same. It's not the same room. It's a different room.
Yeah.
And we see Pinhead
for
just a moment. Just a moment. As he rearranges the parts of the guy's face.
That looks real good. That looked good.
That was incredible. I love that. That was awesome.
He's got very, like, regular-looking hands, Pinhead. Because we see a close-up on his hand as he's kind of putting the box back together. And it doesn't really look like there's any of, like, the white paint on his hands.
Oh, I don't remember that.
This is something that I noticed, and I was like, those are some well-manicured hands there, Pinhead. I like it.
Nice hands, Daddy Pinhead.
I'm sure that changes in the sequels. I'm sure his hands get grosser the further into the sequels you go.
Yeah. I don't know.
It's
something I didn't take notice of, but you were clearly very, very enamored by. This isn't a very sexual movie, by the way. There is sex going on, but...
Well, the book is incredibly horny, so that's probably why...
I mean, there is quite a bit... Actually, there's quite a bit of... Sex is involved, because the whole thing is she cheats on
her
husband with the brother.
But it's not like, super explicit, the movie. The book, there's passages that feel like they're out of 50 Shades.
Ah, nice.
Yeah, it's good. I mean, So, a new couple arrive at this house, Larry and Julia. They are probably, like, mid-40s, something like that, maybe early 50s.
And we go through them going through the house, and we get a bit of exposition through their conversation. So we learned that this was Frank, his brother's house for a bit, because this was their old house. This was their mother's house. And so Frank has been using it as a hideout. Frank doesn't want to sell it because he wants to use it as a hideout.
Yeah.
But now they don't know where Frank is. Like, we haven't talked with him. And they're thinking of moving into it.
Yes.
They find his little makeshift bed.
Yeah, he's like his corner of a room where he's got his bed. He's got some naughty photos.
Yeah. Was it on the bed? Some of them were on that same bed. So he's been bringing girls back to this crappy-ass bedroom.
Yeah, that is a good point.
Yeah.
Unrealistic.
The bedroom sucked. I wouldn't have banged him if I saw what was happening. But he is a bad boy. He's got a lot of charm, so maybe.
We do see as well flashbacks in this moment. As Julia is looking at the photos, we get flashbacks to when she met Frank. Frank showed up wet on her doorway.
No, he wasn't the only one.
Oh, and then they got together. And yeah, like, I immediately just wrote down, wow, this is way less horny than the book. Mm. Though, to be fair, it kind of couldn't go far.
Did you want half of this film devoted to just being a porno?
Well, that's what the book is, though. But that's also what makes it... It's an interesting read because it is very, very, very explicit. But the book as well does make it feel a bit more, I don't know, darker?
Yeah. Books can always go into more detail than films can.
Yeah.
Whereas films have limited amount of time and things that they need to appeal to everyone.
And classification as well. I mean, they had to remove some of the more gruesome moments of the film as well from cinemas. So there's that as well.
It's the strengths and weaknesses of both mediums.
Yeah.
Books can go into more detail, whereas movies can have more of an impact with the visual and representation of stories.
Yeah, exactly. And the movie does still have those underlying themes of, well, I mean, one of the main themes of the whole franchise is pleasure. So obviously that's an underlying theme.
Yeah.
But, you know, it still has that.
Pleasure is the overall theme. Sex is an underlying theme of the pleasure itself. So I feel like it's more prevalent in the books, obviously, as the books are about pleasures and other things. But that's right. I think they did all right with it.
They did.
You still get the idea. They get together. She falls in love with him for some reason.
It's, I don't know if it's love. I think it's just an obsession kind of her. Because she's not like... she's, I guess, in love with Larry.
Mm.
But not in a physical way, I guess. Which she is with Frank.
Yeah.
Which does make it, like, more human,
And it's, I like it because she, you know, she's like a stuffy, proper lady.
Yeah, very British.
Yeah. But she gets it on with the hunky bad boy, you know. It's the classic sort of thing.
And I think he does say as well, come to daddy, in that scene as well.
Mm, nice, great.
Which was good.
And, he would be very good at sex, you know, that's the whole thing. Like, he's all about pleasures, right? Taking it to the next level of pleasure.
Mm-hmm.
So presumably, he's good at banging.
Yes. They don't ever really go into the BDSM stuff in this either.
The what?
But in the book, he's very much into that.
I mean, that makes sense.
Yeah, that makes sense.
No, there was none of that.
No, it was just the chains.
But it would have made sense. It would have made sense, yeah. I'm actually surprised that they didn't do a bit of that.
No, especially because it's directed by the guy who wrote the book. But I guess he was just like, they're both their own separate sort of thing.
They need to make the film a little more tame in that area if they want it to sell.
It's also based off, like, parts of it are based off the author's, like, his experience as a sex worker as well, which is, like, really interesting. He kind of puts some of that into it.
Oh.
Which is probably why he hates the sequel so much, because they very much don't go in that direction. But anyway, we then see that Larry, just the absolute oaf, has cut himself on a nail.
Oh, what a baboon. Yeah, we see them starting to move in, and he baboons it up and cuts himself on a nail. And then he's like, oh, woe is me. I can't stand the sight of blood. I'm going to faint.
To be fair, that cut looked very deep.
Yeah, that cut was awful. That made me hold onto my hand. I cringed.
So he walks into this room where Julia is bleeding profusely from the hand, and he bleeds all over the floorboards.
Yes. But they're too distracted with the cut to notice the blood seeps into the floor.
It seeps into the floor.
Disappears. And we see in the middle of the floor, it's one shot. We never see the shot again. But there's like an in-between of the floors.
Mm.
And in that, we see some like flesh just scattered everywhere and a beating heart.
Yes.
Because it starts to beat when it absorbs the blood.
It absorbs the blood. And then they leave the room to go and bandage him up. And we see what has to be probably the most incredible piece of practical effects I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Which is this body being reconstructed from the floorboards, coming up. There's mucus everywhere.
This is a great scene because it starts off with the floorboards doing that, like, shake thing.
Yeah.
And there's, like, light coming out from underneath. It's like a spaceship entrance or something. But then this body gets constructed from this ooze that oozes out of the floor. It's pretty wild.
And it just, like, it slowly kind of stands up on its hands as there's, like, a jaw on the floor that it picks up at one point, right?
Yeah.
It's just, like, it's incredible. It's gross, but it's really, really well done.
Yeah, it was awesome. He becomes, like, a half-body, like a zombie crawler, almost.
Yeah. It's impressive that he got that much from that amount of blood, considering that he then needs multiple people murdered to regain the rest of his tissue and, like, skin and stuff.
Maybe it's, like, you know, because they're related. It's more potent.
Maybe.
The magic or something.
Maybe.
Who knows?
Who knows? Who cares, quite frankly?
Yeah.
Frankly, his name's Frank.
Ah! Joke daddy. Yes.
Speaking of Frank, Segway's daddy is back as well.
Oh, no.
Wait, that Segway doesn't work.
Fail, daddy, more
Fail.
Like it.
Fail.
So we see, I think they have a party, an opening party for the house.
Yeah, I've been looking at this note that I wrote down, very confused by it, but you just saying the party at the house reminded me of it. The note is, putting a lit cig in your mouth, so hot. And I completely forgot what the context of that is, but...
Right, yeah.
There's this guy at the kitchen table who is flirting with the daughter, Kirsty. The way that he's doing it is, like, he's smoking this cigarette, and he just flips the entire lit cigarette in his mouth, and then he flips it back out again.
Yep.
And she's like, no. And I'm like, what? In what world? In what world?
Cigarette, daddy.
I was just like, sure.
Yeah, that was very stupid. Yeah, well, they're young and stupid.
That's true. They are very young.
And very stupid. So yeah, they have this sort of dinner party thing where we see what's-her-face, the wife. She doesn't enjoy it, of course.
No.
I think she doesn't feel it because she's thinking about Frank.
Yeah, all the memories have made her question stuff and bring up old memories. Yeah.
All that stuff. She's having a domestic, you know, whatever.
She realizes that, oh no, I'm stuck in this marriage that I don't want to be in, I guess.
Yeah, so she excuses herself from the dinner table, and does she go upstairs?
She goes upstairs to the spooky room, and she goes in there, and I think Frank is just like, hey, what's up?
Yeah,
and
she's like, ah!
Yeah, there's a little bit of screaming, but she calms down pretty quickly and is like, oh, it's just Frank. Oh, hey, what's up?
Oh, hey! Awkward old boyfriend Frank.
Yeah, because at this point he's got very minimal bones, so he would just be this. He'd be pretty small.
Oh, hey, you're looking great. Hey. Yeah, Frank. And Frank's like, shut the fuck up, lady. I'm a fucking corpse. What the fuck are you on?
What are you doing?
You can't fool me. Anyway, bring me people to suck.
Yeah. I mean, it's Frank, so really, it's not out of character.
Suck up their blood.
Suck
you know,
up the blood. Suck
stuff.
Up the blood.
Yeah,
so Frank is like, I need some bodies. Bring some bodies to daddy. And she's like, all right. Can we talk about the makeup for Frank, though?
Yeah.
He's so wet and gross. It's perfect.
I was like, Well, yeah.
He looks like a walking body with no skin. It's good.
Yeah.
It's really good.
It's very believable. Very believable. Yeah. He looks like that thing you would find in, like, a medical classroom.
Yes.
Where it's like a dummy with all the flesh taken off. That's him.
Yeah.
That's what he looks like for
That's
a
him.
Visual. Except more gross.
More
like
gross.
Like, slimy. He's, like, slimy with, like, parts of bodies and other things, you know?
Yeah.
He's, like, half-grown in areas, so some places have muscles, some he's just bone. It's just, yeah.
Yeah, it's a real mess, quite frankly. I'm going to keep doing it. And also, though, there is that moment where he does the coolest thing possible. Even though he's just muscle and mucus and goo, he still puts on a nice white shirt.
Oh, right.
he still makes sure to put on this, like, this nice shirt.
He's got to dress nicely, you know? He's a charming individual.
Exactly.
He's got to put on the charm, you know? Got to have a nice, clean, white shirt.
But here's the thing, though. Shirts in the 80s, old shirts, real scratchy. So I feel for him.
Well, here's the thing. He only gets his nerves later on, right?
Oh, actually, you're right there. Yeah, he wouldn't feel anything.
Because that was the specific thing where he's like, hey, my nerves are back. I am in pain.
Yeah.
I was like, ooh, that's going to be rough.
Yeah, yeah.
What's her face? The young girl is Julia?
Julia.
She bumps into the mum and mum's like...
Oh, wait, no, Kirsty.
Everything's fine.
Kirsty's the daughter, Kirsty. Julia's the mum.
Oh, right. Well, Julia and Kirsty bump into each other. Mum's like, I'm fine, don't worry, I'm good.
Very not suspicious at all, yeah.
And then the Frank here, he's like, ooh, is that Kirsty?
Yeah, Frank's a little creepy.
Yeah, look, I think that's the least of Frank's sins, to be honest. For now, anyway, he's gonna literally, like, be stroking her later on. I feel like that's much worse than being like, ah, yes, I can hear the name of my niece, yes.
Mm.
Like, later on, he's a little more pervy than that.
He says, uncle's here, come to daddy. And I'm like, that doesn't make any sense, Frank.
Unless.
You're calling yourself the uncle in one thing, and then you're calling yourself the daddy in the next sentence of this thing you're saying.
Uncles can be daddies.
No, they can't. Sandro. No. Mm-hmm. Uncles can't be daddies.
No, the thing is, they can be uncle to some and daddies to others. And here's this, what if his name is Daddy? Then he's Uncle Daddy.
Oh,
right?
If his name's Uncle Daddy. That sounds like a really bad Adam Sandler movie. Uncle Daddy.
Oh, God.
It would be something like, his brother is a CIA agent who's missing in battle.
Yeah.
He's gonna take care of the kid. He is Uncle Daddy.
But they don't know who the father of which is.
Oh, no.
So is he the uncle or is he the daddy?
We really should write bad comedy movies from the early 2000s.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So they had a hangover thing where they like all banged and they don't know whose child is who.
Yeah. This weird, like, virginity pact. They all lost it
at this
party.
Oh, yes! That's so... That does sound like an Adam Sandler thing. It's like, well, I don't want to die a virgin.
Oh, I hate all of this.
Yep.
That would be a great movie.
That would be a 5% at best on Rotten Tomatoes.
Real low. Real low.
Mm.
Although, maybe Owen Wilson can be the brother. I think that'll help it.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. He Navy SEAL.
So Julia goes to a very high-class bar.
Moving on.
And picks up this dude, brings the dude back to the creepy room in her place, murders him with a hammer.
Yeah, and she's a pretty hesitant. You know, because she's got to do a murder.
Mm.
But she's also an awful human being, as we find out.
Yeah.
And so she does it. Yeah, she murders a guy for Frankie. And Frank's like, ooh, yes, give me some of that.
Yeah. And it looks good as well, because in like a higher budget slasher movie, you might see the hammer really caving in the head. But they don't have the money for that. Instead, it's a lot of quick cuts, but it still looks really, really gruesome. You still get that impact.
You get a bonk and then a lot of blood.
Yeah.
She's murdered a dude and she's a little shaken up over the thing.
Yeah, a little bit.
Frank gives the guy the good old suck.
Oh, yeah. After she makes the first kill, Larry comes home and she's got to, like, hide the body in the bathroom, which pretend to be sick.
Yeah, that's right. That's it. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So the dad comes home and she hardly's like, oh, what am I gonna do? So she grabs the body, like she has to take off her jacket because it's covered in blood, and then she grabs the body and just shoves it in one of the rooms. She hides in the bathroom and he's like, how you doing? And she's like, I'm sick. And he's like, oh, that's no good. And he's like, make me a brandy.
Yep.
And he's like, one brandy coming up.
One brandy. That's the most British, like middle-aged British spirit brandy.
Oh, absolutely.
I love a good brandy, though. I wonder if a joke has ever been made in the movie where, like, someone kills someone with, like, a real hot branding, like, iron, right?
Uh-huh.
And, like, puts it to, I don't know, the throat or something. And then afterwards is like, make me a brandy. That feels like a Friday the 13th 11 sort of joke.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. I certainly agree. I could use a brandy after that joke.
So she keeps killing people. She kills another dude.
Does she kill three people, I think?
Yeah, I think it's three in total.
You got two horny dudes and one really nervous horny dude.
Very nervous. Is he the married one? I think he's married.
Yeah, he's the married one. Yeah.
We also see that Kirsty is hanging out outside of the home and sees Julia bringing one of these dudes over.
So the dad has a dinner date with the daughter, and they're like, they're talking about how, you know, the relationship's not going so well with her. She seems so distant lately, you know. The dad asks the daughter, like, hey, can you talk with my wife? Try and, you know, figure out what's wrong. Maybe she needs a woman.
Yes.
So she goes over to chat with the lady, and she spots Julia taking a man inside.
Mm.
And I was wondering if they were going to go, like, thinking that she's cheating.
That is, yeah, in the book, that's what Kirsty thinks.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I can only assume it's the same here.
What they really should have done was a voiceover of the daughter going, I wonder what she's doing. Is she cheating on my dad?
I kind of want to make an edit where I grab that scene and then just put that over the top of it.
Yeah, yeah, oh, yes.
Put that on Instagram. I might do it. That'd be fun.
Oh, no. What have I done?
Oh, we should mention as well, Kirstie's hanging out in the city and sees this weird, like, rough-looking dude just following her around.
Yeah, so she has a job at, like, a pet store or whatever, and she's been hanging out with her boyfriend in the city. She's been doing a job, and all the time she's been followed by this weird homeless-looking dude.
Yeah, he's, like, eating grasshoppers out of a tank at her work.
Yeah, yeah, he goes to her store and, like, grabs a good old handful of the grasshoppers that they feed to the animals.
Mm.
And he's just like, om, 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 delicious.
Delicious. Anyway, he's important for the end.
Yep.
I like him. That's a new thing. That's the only part of the movie so far that's absolutely not in the book.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. Interesting.
We see a shot of a bunch of rats nailed to a wall.
Yeah, yeah. Because we see later on that Frank goes to murder his brother.
Yeah, that's right now, actually. That is right now.
Yeah, yeah. And she goes, no, don't murder him. So he instead just, like, cuts the top open of a rat.
Ugh.
Very unpleasant.
Ugh. I know it's a fake rat, but, it looks, oh boy.
Yeah. Ugh. It looks real, and that's what matters.
Yeah, she's like, no, don't kill Larry. Mm. Larry's harmless. And he's like, fine, I won't kill Larry, find me someone else. So that's when she finds the third person.
Yeah, yeah. Brings him home, daughter spots it, daughter creeps in just in time to see the half-sucked corpse making an escape. And he's, like, he's all fleshy and drained, and he's like, help me.
Yeah, it's weird that Frank let this guy get a chance to escape. Or maybe this happens every time, we don't know.
Yeah, yeah, it's possible, but I think this one, because he was less...
Oh, yeah, it's the nervous... Yeah, it's the nervous dude.
Yeah, he's nervous. He was already a bit flighty, so he was already planning his escape, you know?
So Kirstie's immediately like, well, something's up here.
Yeah, no shit, because she sees a fucking dead guy just trying to thing, and she sees Frank, doesn't she?
Yeah, well, yeah, she goes into the creepy room, sees Frank there, and Frank's like, it's me, it's Frank, Uncle Frank, come to daddy.
And she's like, no, what the fuck, get away from me, which was a very, very realistic reaction, I think.
She finds the puzzle box on the floor, and he's like, no, don't touch the puzzle box, it's my precious thing, don't touch the box.
She's like, oh, you want this box? Go fucking get it, yeet.
Yeah.
Through a window.
Throws it out the window.
And he's like, no. Now, I have a question for you, Sandro.
Yeah, what is this question?
While this is all going on, what is Julie doing?
She's crying in the bathroom. She's real upset.
Is she?
No. She just kind of disappears.
Yep. For a bit for this movie.
I don't know where Julia went.
Yeah.
I guess she's hiding from maybe Kirsty.
The movie just kind of forgets about her for a sec.
Yeah.
Nope, we don't get an explanation, so she just disappeared for a bit. Anyway,
Kirsty throws the box out of the window, and Frank is knowing so much that he lets her run out of the room because he's so busy going, no.
And so she runs out, and she runs out of the house, and she's like, oh, I better pick up this cube while I'm on the way out.
We get one part that I really, really didn't like. The only part of this movie... Well, the scorpion thing as well.
Why do you hate fetus scorpion so much?
It was weird. But that's coming up. But this part, she's walking through town with the box, and she's remembering events that just happened, and we get that dumb cliche. I genuinely dislike it, where we get the dialogue from Frank explaining something about the box that she overheard, but it's slowed down, it's in a deeper pitch, and we just heard this. We just heard it. There's no need to replay it.
Oh, yeah, it was so dumb as well, yes. Give me the box.
And she's like, wow, this box must be important.
Yeah. The movie rubs it in just a little bit too much. Yeah, you're right. Oh, yeah, I thought that was one. Because he says daddy in the flashback, and else it's like, dad, come to daddy.
And I think that's when she passes out as well. She's walking down the street and just passes out.
Which is incredible. And then you have some passers by like, you okay?
That's good.
She wakes up in a hospital room and they give her the puzzle box, which is a very smart idea. Good work, doctors. Mm. They don't know, to be fair. But also...
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, it's hers, so I don't think they can kind of, like, keep it from her. Yeah. How do the doctors know that this puzzle box is like an interdimensional travel device?
Well, they would have looked it up on their phones. They would have gone to Creepypasta and seen all the urban legends.
Oh, hey, this is the creepy object from Hellraiser. Oh, crap.
Oh, no.
Wait, what does it say about the doctors in here? Oh, very handsome and smart. Yeah, I'm going to edit the Wikipedia page for that. Add that in.
Do they die? They don't. That's fine. No repercussions. We'll give her the box. The movie can keep going.
We'll give her the box. Yeah, continue on.
So she plays with the box. She solves it. The weird magic effects were kind of whatever.
Mm. But it opens a door. And by door, I mean the wall opens up. We see a corridor.
It leads to a gothic hallway that she walks down.
And she's like, ooh, creepy hallway that just opened up. Better walk through there.
Yeah.
Classic.
Look, I was saying earlier that there's no moments where characters do things that they wouldn't do in real life, but maybe this is one of them.
That was what I was going to bring up, but I was also going to put out the point that maybe she is trying to escape the doctor's place, so maybe she thought this was a way out.
True.
And it sort of was, but also, don't go in creepy corridors that open up when you open magical boxes, kids.
I would say just don't go in creepy corridors in general.
Well, you know, depends.
Have you ever had a good experience in a creepy corridor?
Oh, all the time.
Oh, all right.
Yeah, I regularly go around. I'm like, oh, creepy corridor, better walk through there. Actually, you know what? Come to think of it, I haven't had a good experience in any creepy corridors.
I was going to say.
Wait a minute.
At the end of this particular creepy corridor, though, is a,
it's Fetus Scorpion.
Scorpion baby, which is so obviously on a track, just like moving on a track.
Yeah. But I like that he made some nice, lovely baby sounds before we saw him.
Yeah, that was kind of cool.
Yeah, I love it when horror movies add just random baby sounds for no reason.
It's because babies are creepy.
They are. Yeah. They are awful.
Hellspawn, Hell Devil, Hell Satans.
Hellraiser.
Hellraiser.
Hellraisins.
Hellbrazer. It's a brazer from hell.
Yeah, I got that from the name, actually.
He's brazen beef, but he's from hell.
Ooh.
It's Gordon Ramsay's new show.
Yeah, with a bit of hell raisins on top. Ooh, delicious.
Yeah, with some hell raisins. They're raisins, but they were grown in hell.
Yeah, okay.
This is a terrible show. Idea.
This is a terrible bit.
So
she gets chased by the scorpion fetus.
Yeah.
And she runs back into the doctor's room, plays with the puzzle box. She's like,
yeah, because it's something like if you don't solve it correctly, you get sent to this weird place with the demon baby scorpion. She closes that particular doorway and then opens up complete mayhem in the room. Like the IV bag is like overflowing and it like fills up so much that it bursts.
Starts shooting blood everywhere. Yeah.
Yeah. The TV's going nuts.
And Pinhead shows up and the goons, the squad.
And Pinhead says the line, "The box. You opened it. We came."
Ooh. Play with that box a little more.
I really liked how Pinhead was like, "You didn't know what you were doing when you opened this, right?" Ah, it happens all the time.
Yeah.
This happens all the time. It's a real shame. Unfortunately, we've got to keep your soul for eternity now.
Yeah. I feel like that makes sense. feel like that makes sense. Look, the pact is you mess with the box, you get lots of pleasure, but you also, your soul's trapped here.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter if you did it by accident.
No, I like that part. I like that part as well. The glasses guy, Mr. Butterball, keeps licking his lips, and it's very disturbing.
Now, here's the bit where I actually had the most problem. She goes, hey, you know Frank? Like, out of the blue? Like, wait, why does she bring up their uncle?
Well, because he had the box.
Yeah, but she really thinks on her feet right now, because I don't think it's realistic that she would go, oh, hey, you know Frank, that guy you captured?
Yeah, because I think she overheard Frank telling Julia his story, so I think she knew a certain amount of what happened, that he, like, escaped from them.
Did she hear that?
Because I'm pretty sure Frank says, I escaped from them, and with your help, I'll be able to come back to my earthly form or whatever.
Yeah, I guess I missed the bit where she overheard that.
Maybe she did, I'm not sure, but I think that's what happens.
She's like, hey, how about instead of doing this all to me, I'll get you Frank back, and then I can go free.
My question, though, is she's just saying Frank, no last name. I'm sure there's a lot of Franks that open the box.
Yes, but also, it's context clues. I'm sure Pinhead can get the context clues. He's a smart chicken.
Pinhead does look quite smart. This is true.
Yeah, yeah. Literally last week, we had a guy called Frank come in. Looks related to this one here. Maybe that's the one she's referring to. But yes, he should have put on his glasses and go, Frank who?
Which Frank?
Last name, please.
Which Frank?
We've got a lot of Franks here, actually. Been around couple of centuries, you know, couple of millennia.
Oh, you mean Frank Daddy? Yes, I see Frank Daddy right here on my list.
Ah, Frank Daddy, yes. Frank Uncle Daddy.
Frank Uncle Daddy. Middle name Uncle, last name Daddy.
Daddy. Oh, that's weird. I see him checking out. I didn't even know that was a section on my book here. He's the only person who's ever checked out, actually.
Well, that's not good.
That's not good. We should get him back.
No.
All right. Well, seeing as you've put a good deal on us, young lady, we'll let you go for now. But if you double-cross us, or you know what I'm going to have to do to that soul, young missy? And that's the exact quote.
That's what he says. I was like, why is Swedish Chef?
Pleasure for Canada.
Hey, question, random tangent time. Did you ever do that thing where, like, you got a board of wood, you put nails into the wood, and then, like, strung, like, rubber bands across the nails to have them stretched out, and then you could kind of play it, kind of like a guitar? It would make, like, a note?
I think I've done something similar. I did it with a tissue box.
Oh, okay.
So you put the rubber bands over a tissue box, and then it made a little guitar thing, and then you played a guitar.
If Pinhead did that to his head, he could be like a one-man band. He's just playing his head. He just puts...
Oh, I see. I see where this is going. I was a little confused, but now I see. I see, yes. Yeah. He just has all these rubber bands, and then he's like... Just like, whenever he scratches his head, he plays a little tune.
Yeah. Pinhead in his one-man show.
Yeah, Bandhead.
Bandhead. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because not only is he a one-man band, he's also using rubber bands on his head. Band head.
I like it. I like it. Smart.
Now that's a pleasure of the universe.
Oh.
If ever I heard one.
And speaking of pleasures, Daddy segues back.
Oh, no.
Speaking of pleasures, Frank has taken over Larry's body.
Oh, yeah. Well, he hasn't taken over his body. It's more like he skinned him alive and then put it over his skin.
Yeah, he's worried the flesh. He managed to get it pretty well, like, on his face. It lines up almost perfectly. It's almost like the actor that plays Larry is now playing the part of Frank.
Because we see that there's like, gore on his ear.
Mm.
Like, that's where they've like, cut him open. So that's clearly not the case, Sandra.
Yeah.
Clearly, the actor skins the other actor alive and wore his skin.
Oh, that's why none of these actors really did anything after this. Not because they went to do TV, like Deep Space Nine. No. The actors murdered each other.
Yeah, the actors died to make this film. Just like every five-year-old child believes. Any yeah. actor that died in the film had to die for the
film.
We do get a bit of a moment where the movie doesn't explain that it happens, so it's a little bit of a mystery. We don't... if you were maybe 10 years old, you wouldn't realize that Frank had taken over the guy's body. It's a bit obvious. It's a bit obvious.
Kind of obvious.
But I like the little bit of a mystery there where she doesn't realize that it's Frank,
yeah.
not her dad.
It's clear something's going on. She's certain something's going on, but she's not sure exactly what.
So she wants to see, like, Frank's body. So Frank tells her that Frank is dead.
Mm.
And that his own body is upstairs. It's like, I had to kill him. Oh, yes, he was so evil. Oh.
Yeah, he's almost like complimenting himself. He's like, he's one of the evilest people I've ever seen.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
And then he shows her the body and she's like, oh my God, Frank's dead. Oh no, my soul's going to be taken by the pinhead now. But don't you worry, little lassie, because your dad's actually dead. And it's actually Frank inside the body.
And the way that she finds out is Larry tells her, oh, I know you're upset. Come here. Come to daddy. And she's like, oh, you're actually Frank because you said the word daddy.
Larry, that's, yeah, my daddy's never said daddy before daddy.
Yeah, there's a few moments in this movie that are really cheesy. And this is one of them, yeah. But it just adds to it, to be honest.
Oh, it's very incredible. So she runs from him. He tries to stab her.
Yeah.
And misses yeah. and stabs.
Stabs Julia right in the stomach.
Julia. Yeah.
Yeah. And he's not angry about it either. He's like, oh, I'm sorry, but it had to be done.
That's the thing. I think he was planning on betraying her.
Yeah, definitely.
And then he accidentally stabs her and he's like, well, it was going to happen eventually.
Yeah.
And then he does a little suck on her. Just a little quick suck.
Take some of her life juices. Also, Kirsty at one point grabs his face and pulls some of it off.
Oh, yeah. Like when they're struggling, she like swipes at him and we see like bits of his face. Like
yeah.
claw marks of her nails, like yeah. peeling off her skin. Ugh.
Real yucko.
There's a bit of a chase where she tries to hide and she bumps into one of the bodies. The body, like, spews maggots onto her.
Yeah, the body's so rotten that there's maggots in its throat.
Gross.
So when she pushes the body over, all the maggots come out. Ugh.
Gross stuff.
The only proper jump scare in this movie, but I feel like that was the jump scare was earned.
Well earned one.
Yeah. Eventually, they both end up in the creepy room, though.
Yeah, yeah, he confronts her in the creepy room, and he's like, ha ha ha, but then the lights start to go strange, just like they did before, and somehow Frank doesn't realize what's about to happen.
Yeah, I feel like he really should know, because it's almost like they took the exact same scenes from the start of the movie and just played them again here. He really should be picking up what's happening.
Yeah, he should have been like, oh shit, I've got to leave, and then, you know, the door gets blocked off by chains or whatever, you
yeah,
know.
Yeah, it does.
Anyway, so Pinhead and the cronies,
yep.
and they're like, yo, what's up, Frank? It's your boys. You gotta be damned for eternity, remember?
Oh, naughty Frank tried to escape.
Naughty Frank, daddy.
We're gonna punish you in hell.
We're gonna give you a good old spanking, if you know what I mean.
Actually, no, he would enjoy that.
Except they don't spank him. They, in fact, chain him. As he goes to try and murder Julia just before any of this happens, chains whip out to him and do that thing where they rip into his flesh. Very uncomfortable, as I mentioned before. But even worse, we get to see him hanging there.
Yeah.
Just in a second, as his flesh starts to be stretched by it.
It's so stretched.
And he, like, licks his lips.
Yeah, I love this moment in the book, because it's all from Kirsty's point of view, and she's like, instead of praying for help, instead of asking the Cenobites to release him, he does a lewd motion with his lips and tongue, just to show how real, just disgusting this guy is.
Yeah, yeah.
I like that moment in the books, and that they kept it in this as well.
Yeah, and then he says, Jesus wept, which is the very famous Bible verse, being the shortest Bible verse.
And speaking of short, his life, pretty short. No.
It's a good thing he chose a short one, because immediately after, his body gets exploded by the hooks.
Yeah, which was a little over the top, but it was cool.
On par for this movie.
Yeah, yep. He just explodes. Now, in the book, this is where it ends.
Yes, that's what I was going to ask. Is that Is that the end?
Yep.
Because it felt like where the movie should have ended.
Yeah, the Cenobites are like, well, you delivered us, Frank. We'll stay true to our word, except you can have the box. The box is yours now. Do with it whatever you wish. And then she goes off. The book ends.
Yeah, you know what? I think that is a better ending because it makes more sense for their characters. But instead, in the movie, the Cenobites are like, okay, now it's time for you to get got. And she's like, yeah. No.
I didn't love that.
You know what? Yeah, I would have liked it a lot better if they less did like, oh, now we have an action running around. It was still cool. I still liked it. I think it would have made a nice, cleaner ending if it was...
Yeah, it was... It was still a well-done moment because we got to see more of the Cenobites. We got to see what they do as well.
Yeah, yeah.
Which was cool.
We of course, get to see Butterscotch over here. Butterbean. He tries to attack them, but the house is collapsing. So the house just collapses on top of this interdimensional demon.
Yeah, crushes him. Poor Butterball.
And he's got. That's it. That's it for him. And I was like, oh my God. He died like such an idiot.
Yeah.
Well, he didn't die, but he got like such an idiot.
We also see, because he's wearing glasses throughout the whole movie, he takes them off and he's got like teeth for eyes.
Yeah. Just for a second, that was good.
Just for a hot sec.
I liked the thing where whenever you close the box, it can actually send them away. So she uses that to send Pinhead and Throat Mummy away.
I forgot that's what we were calling her.
I thought I'd bring that back in, just a cute reminder. But then Fetus Scorpion shows up.
Shows up again.
Luckily, he gets stuck in a door, which was very dumb.
Yeah.
But he knocks the cube out of her hands. And so they have, like, a slap fight with the cube on the floor.
This is very movie. It's very much a movie moment.
Yeah.
It's kind of dumb.
It's very dumb. But it was also enjoyable.
Yeah, it's fine.
She grabs the cube, shoots him away, and the house crumbles and burns.
Yeah. And then, to wrap up the movie, the epilogue of the movie is she's standing by a fire. I think it's like some burning remains of her house or something.
Yeah.
Her boyfriend's there and they've got the cube and they throw the cube into the fire. Get rid of it once and for all. No one needs the puzzle box anymore.
Ah, but then the homeless dude that's been following her all this time, he shows up and he walks into the fire.
Yeah.
Picks up the cube on fire and his flesh burns away to reveal... A bone dragon?
He is a bone dragon!
And he flies away with the cube.
So, I haven't seen any of the Hellraiser sequels. I've got no idea if they expand upon this. But, maybe an angel.
That's a good theory. But we do see at the very end, the Asian fella and the market. He has the cube back again.
So that could be the dragon.
It could be. That's another thing. No, I'm just saying, I think it's just a servant of the explorers that, like, just brings the cube back to the Asian guy so he could sell it to another person.
Maybe. And that is Hellraiser right there. Dusting off our hands with that kinky flesh.
Get it off our hands. Ooh, it's a bit slimy. Ugh, gross.
No way near as horny as the book, but still really good. It's got so many great ideas. The visuals, mostly incredible. Really good quotes.
Mm.
And a lot of daddy. And just a lot of daddy.
I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it a lot. I definitely think if we get to the change remove section, change that ending to the book's ending, because I like the book ending a lot more.
Yeah. I like the idea that the Cenobites do have the rules, and they play by those rules, and if they make a deal with someone, they stick by that deal.
Yeah, that makes more sense. That being said, they obviously wanted, like, a sequel or some action for the end.
Yeah. It's like a running, I guess, theme with book adaptations from the 80s, though. Like, the original version of Pet Sematary, the movie of Pet Sematary by Stephen King.
Yeah.
The ending of that book is, like, 30 pages worth that they stretch out to be half an hour for the movie. And they have done kind of the same thing here as well.
Yeah.
Like, just taking a tiny part and just stretched it to be, like, this massive end kind of action sequence.
Yeah, they obviously wanted to make it more epic.
But yeah, it's a goodie. It's definitely a goodie.
Yeah, it's a goodie from me as well. Yeah.
It's probably like a, yeah, like 3.5, 4. It's not amazing, but it's solid.
I'd say 7.7
7.7, yes. So that's, so you would remove and add kind of the ending. Kind
yeah,
of
so I like the sound of the ending in the books a lot more. I like the idea. Yeah, as we discussed, I feel like that makes sense for them, that they're very rules-based.
Yeah.
And that's how they do these sort of things.
Is there anything else I would change? No, that's probably it. That's probably it. Otherwise, I think it's a really good film.
Sweet.
Yeah,
I don't know what I would change. It's kind of the same with the ending, but I'll pick something different. Maybe I would add more sexuality stuff, maybe, but also there's enough in this to kind of push...
Yeah, more horny in my movie.
Yeah,
more horny daddy.
Give me more horniness.
I need someone to refer to Pinhead as daddy, you know, at least once.
That almost definitely happens in many of the many sequels. And also, I would remove any of the visual effects that aren't practical. Just get rid of them.
Oh, right. Yeah, that's a good idea.
Just get rid of
them. That's a good idea. So, you're talking about sequels. What is the deal with these sequels?
Well, Hellraiser. Big franchise.
Yeah.
Big money maker. Just like the Children of Corn episode that we did last year, gonna go through them all.
All right, let's talk about them. What do we got?
Buckle up. So first of all, first thing to mention is there is a sequel in the land of the books, 2015.
Yep.
Clive Barker wrote a sequel novel.
Wow, 2015. So that's a big gap.
Very big gap.
So he made it after those movies came out, and he's like, these movies are shit.
Yeah, I'm going to make
a proper sequel. Yeah, there you go. He made this book out of spite.
It's something about a detective's friend or family member gets taken by Pinhead, and then the detective has to find out what the heck is going on. But anyway, the actual sequels, 1988, 1 year later, we got Hellbound, Hellraiser 2, written by Clive Barker. This is the only one that he's properly involved in.
All right.
The plot is Kirsty. It's still following her. She's sent to a psych hospital.
Of course.
And one of the doctors accidentally lets the Cenobites into the hospital or something.
God damn it.
Yeah.
That does sound very stupid, but it is the classic. Oh, this lady who went through trauma, now she's in a psych ward. Because people think she's crazy.
It's exactly the same as the original Halloween 2, entirely set in a hospital.
Yeah.
So they're just kind of doing the same thing. Apparently it's all right, though. Apparently the second one's not too bad.
Yeah, I've heard that the first three were okay.
Yeah. So number three is Hellraiser 3, Hell on Earth. Something about Pinhead's turning humans into new versions of Cenobites.
Oh, yeah.
And it's also, like, he's mainly on Earth. He's going on like a murder spree or something. It's more of a slasher, I think.
Ah, interesting.
The fourth one is Hellraiser Bloodline from 96. It's like three short stories.
Oh.
Each involving the same family, but in different time periods. Like, one set in, like, ye olde days, one of them's present, one of them's far future.
That could be good.
Maybe.
But I have a feeling that they aren't by the fourth one.
That is the last one to be released in theaters. All the rest are direct-to-video.
Oh, my God.
So
okay.
Maybe
wait,
it destroyed
more?
The franchise forever.
Oops.
Hellraiser 5 is called Inferno from the year 2000, about a detective who finds the box at a crime scene and has to figure out what the heck is going on.
And that went straight.
Hellraiser Hellseeker was released in 2002.
Oh, my God. They really need new ideas.
It's something about a car crash caused by something, and in the car crash, the wife dies, but the husband survives, and then he's got to find out what happened. And Kirstie's apparently in it again.
Oh, my Lord.
She's back. I don't know.
Money, I guess.
I guess. 2005, Hellraiser Deader.
Hellraiser Deader?
Yeah, I know. It's awful. It's the worst title.
The movies may have gone downhill, but the titles are the real victims of this.
All the titles are awful. I'm not going to lie.
That's terrible. Yeah.
A London reporter finds a group of people who claim they can bring back dead people. So I guess they used the power of the Cenobites or whatever to do it. I don't know.
Yeah.
Also in 2005, Hellraiser Hellworld.
Wait, they put two out in 1 year?
Yes, two out in 1 year.
Yikes.
If we're going to watch any of them, it's 2, 3, and maybe Hellworld. Because the concept is the best thing I have ever seen.
Oh, crap. Hellworld. All right.
You ready for the concept of Hellworld? Pinhead is back. to torment computer hackers.
Oh, no!
Who have opened a virtual lament configuration on the Hellworld website. Oh, so there's a virtual version of the puzzle box on a website.
No, that's so stupid.
I want to watch that so bad. 2011, Hellraiser Revelations. Bunch of teens find box, bad stuff happens. 2018, Hellraiser Judgment. More detectives doing detective work. And that's all the sequels.
Yep.
Hellworld is the only one that sounds somewhat original. And by original, I mean terrible but amazing.
I don't know. Here's the thing. Would, if we did the other ones, would we skip all the other movies between just to do that one? Or would we have to go through each one?
Oh, I guess if people want it, we could do it kind of like how we're doing Police Academy, which we do need to do the next one of soon at some point.
Can we not?
The last one was good, but yeah, who knows?
That one was all right, actually. Yeah. That's fair. That's fair.
Yeah, I think we'd have to go through them all, I guess.
Yeah, that's a tricky one. We'll see. Maybe we'll put it up to vote.
Would you prefer to do all of those or all of the Children of the Corn films, though? Which franchise?
I don't know. They both sound like terrible ideas.
A few months ago, there was news that Hulu has acquired the rights for a direct remake of the first movie.
What, of Children of the Corn?
Of Hellraiser. So I think they're remaking the original Hellraiser. Except Pinhead's going to be a woman.
Huh?
Psh, whatever. Who cares?
I guess, yeah. No, but like, who does care? Why are you remaking it? Like,
yeah, that's true.
That's a weird one.
On top of that as well, HBO is working on a Hellraiser TV show with the team behind the Halloween movies.
Okay, yeah. I could see them making a TV show. I could see it being awful, but I could also see them making a TV show rather than a remake.
Next segment, I guess.
Right, it's time for raving reviews. All right, so first up is Daddy Robert.
Are you serious?
No.
No.
I'm just going to add Daddy to all their names because it's going to be funny.
It will be funny. We know how comedy works.
Yeah, Daddy Robert. All Hellraiser films are weird and unstable thanks to Clive Barker.
What does that even mean?
I don't know. But there's two explanation marks. So it's...
Oh, well, that's explanation points make me think it is positive. I'm going to give this 3.5.
It's 2 out of 5. 2 out of 5.
Great.
Daddy Joshua says an unsettling premise and the practical effects still hold up well. B.
Great. We've yep. got a letter.
Yep. Everyone's favorite.
B's like a 4? I'm going to go 4.
4. Ah, it's 3.5.
Ah, close. 3.5. Close.
Yeah, you were close. We have Noah, someone who didn't have a username, so I'm just going to call them Daddy.
Yeah.
He says, who you calling a pinhead?
I hate, like, every now and then we do a really popular movie and all the reviews are just nonsense.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Because there's so many people, I can just find the most nonsensical.
Yeah.
Who are you calling a pinhead? Question mark. It sounds like it should be a quote from the movie. It's like, who you calling pinhead?
Oh,
but it's not at all.
That's definitely in Hellraiser Hellworld, though. That's definitely a quote.
Yeah, absolutely.
In Hellworld. Do you reckon he kills people with, like, a digital avatar?
Yes. I'm sure of it. I'm sure that at some point he'll grab the hacker, drag them into the computer, and, like, throw them in the trash or something to delete them.
I'm going to say that... Oh, I just looked it up. The poster is literally The Matrix, but with Pinhead's head on it.
Oh, that's awful. I hate it so much.
Evil goes online is the tagline.
Ah, that's a good tagline, though.
Anyway, I'm going to say that's probably a... 5 out of 5.
3 out of 5. 3 out of 5.
All right.
Okay, James says, and now we've got some long ones, so hear me out. Despite it having very creative gore and effects, Hellraiser is not the type of horror movie that would stick out to me as a classic. Lacks depth and meaning with a lot of its characters and makes a lot of confusing choices with its story, particularly with its very bizarre ending.
I wouldn't agree there. I don't think the ending's the most bizarre part of this movie.
Well, yeah.
It's weird, but it's not like...
Now that we've talked about the ending, I get maybe where they're coming from, but I thought that it had a lot of depth to its characters.
Yeah.
Not all of them, I guess.
It does feel like a B-list horror classic, maybe.
Mm,
it's not
yeah.
as great as some of the big ones, but, you know, it's
yeah.
it's all right.
You don't have to be the best to be a classic.
No. 2.5.
It's 3 out of 5.
Ah, okay.
3 out of 5. Oh, sorry, that was from Daddy James.
Daddy James.
Not regular James.
Yeah.
We have Daddy Emily.
Oh.
He says, rewatch this film for the first time in maybe 20 years. It's not as great or scary as when I first watched it, but still offered some dark tones and sweet practical effects.
Mm.
Not to mention the beginning of an iconic horror villain when you consider the kind of shitty ending, I was slightly generous with my rating, simply due to the aforementioned reasons.
Yeah, okay, so more people don't like the ending. That's fair enough.
A lot of people complained about the ending.
I wonder if they've also read the book. I don't know. I'm going to say Emily probably gave this... She said she was being quite generous with her rating, so I'm going to say 4. I'm going to say 4?
It's 3 out of 5.
Okay.
Three out of five again, for the third time in a row. Now we have Daddy Ray, which I think we will all get along with Daddy Ray. He says, I watched this one after a party last Sat night. I think they're coming for me. Skull emoji, skull emoji, skull emoji, thumbs up emoji, thumbs up emoji, thumbs up emoji.
How is coming spelt?
Correctly.
Ah, I want to go no rating, but that's only for Letterboxd. But it's the most no rating review
I'll give you a clue here, okay?
Yeah.
I watched this after the party last Sat, and then it hasn't got a space, it's got a dot night.
But it's 5 out of 5.
It's 5 out of 5. Yeah.
It was obvious once you pointed out a misspelling that this was a 5 out of 5.
Yeah. I thought the emojis would have given it away, but...
Sometimes emojis can be used in quite a good way, though. I sometimes use my emojis.
I disagree. If you've ever used an emoji in your life, you're a bad human being.
Every single person on the face of the earth aside from my grandma.
Correct. David says the movie wasn't bad, just very messed up, and the effects were a little cheesy. Also... They don't really explain much, and it has a super weird ending.
Yeah, pretty... That seems to be the general consensus.
Yep.
For most of these reviews, 3 out of 5, I'm going to guess.
It's 3.5!
Oh, I haven't gotten a single one right aside from the 5 out of 5.
Well, that's unfortunate, because that was the last review.
Well, there we go. That's the episode right there on Hellraiser. Thank you so much for listening, as always. Bit of a long one, but the last two have been quite short anyway, so maybe we were due for a long one. I don't know.
I think I'd like to thank our daddies on Patreon for making our sugar daddies on Patreon, making this possible. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
You can go check out our Patreon for extra bonus episodes, minimum 2 a month.
Yep.
We're doing the Evil Dead series.
We are.
Which feature the Deadites.
The Deadites, yes.
Yeah, the Deadites, which is the ones I was getting confused with.
When is this episode coming out? I think... Evil Dead 2 is coming out on Wednesday.
So check it out. It's some great things to talk about. There's some good episodes
yeah,
on those ones.
Yeah, it's good fun. And I think we mentioned it last week as well, but for the fourth and final one, the remake, if you will, Scorn Gaming from our Jaws and Superman episode.
And now that's a real daddy.
Now he's the
Scorn
biggest daddy I've ever seen. Yeah.
Oh my God, I love me some Scorn Daddy.
You can also follow us on Facebook, on Instagram. We've got an email address. We are on YouTube as well. That's sometimes updated and up to date. And also, if you want to review the show on iTunes, that helps get it out in front of a bunch of new people as well. So that would be greatly appreciated. Links to everything in the episode description. Now, Zach, you are picking next week's movie.
Yeah. All right. What's my options? Tell me about them. Options, Daddy.
That's me, Options Daddy. Speaking of Options Daddy, that's right, Segway Daddy is still here as well. I'm both of them at the same time.
I'm getting confused.
Multiple daddies living inside one daddy.
Mm.
Your first option is called Best Seller, or as I like to call it, Daddy Seller. I'm not doing this again, actually. I'm ending it there.
Please not. Not when I'm trying to pick them.
It will make you very confused.
Yes. So what's this one called?
Best Seller. It's about a hitman who works with an author to try and turn the hitman's life story into a book.
Mm.
So I guess he's probably recounting his life
Sounds kind of interesting, yeah.
The Big Town is a movie where a gambler becomes romantically involved with two women. Oh my goodness.
Oh my god, that's more than one. That's a no-no.
What the heck?
That's a naughty.
That gambler sounds like a real daddy.
No comment.
You've got Inter Vista.
Ooh.
It's by Italian director Federico Fellini, one of the best directors of all time.
Oh yeah.
He plays himself
Ooh.
In a movie where he's getting interviewed for a movie, and then weird stuff starts happening in the interview,
Whoa.
And he himself is reacting to it, but he also directed said movie.
That is bizarre.
Mm.
And also, I feel like after you said all that, there should have been a...
Christopher Nolan wishes he could come up with something original like this.
Yeah. Whoa, shots fired.
All right, your fourth and final option is called Real Men. A CIA agent is teamed up with a citizen who looks identical to someone who has gone missing. They team up to find out the truth about a conspiracy that maybe involves aliens.
What?
I don't know.
Wait, oh, it involves aliens?
Aliens?
What?
Maybe.
That took a twist at the end.
It also stars Jim Belushi, who was in that movie option from this week.
Oh, right. Okay. Well, maybe we should give him a go.
You want to give the Belushi a go?
Yeah. I want to go on that Belushi, if you know what I'm saying.
He's good in, he's really good in the Twin Peaks miniseries.
Oh, really? This sounds rather interesting. Okay. Yeah. Like, I wasn't on board, but when you said aliens and... there's weird body swapping. Maybe we do that one.
Could be interesting.
I like the sound of the third one as well, the director one. It sounds like it could also be quite artsy.
Yeah, which we just did last week, so...
Yeah, exactly. So maybe we save that one for a Patreon at some point. Or
maybe. Or I'll just watch it.
Or you could just watch it. Yeah, that would also work. See if it's any good.
So, Real Men next week. All right, we'll do that.
Yeah.
We're going to wrap it up with the best quote from Hellraiser. Mine is going to be, the box. You opened it. Oh, we came.
Well, my favorite quote is, who you call a pinhead? I'm like, pin daddy. Yeah.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.